You ever seen a grown man naked? Joey, you ever hang around the gymnasium? Joey, you like movies about gladiators? Joey, have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. Torn by Sports, local teams, local coverage, real fans. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. On the other side, John English, the Germs guy. And we have a special guest with us this week. I'm very excited about this. Someone who's a personal friend. I do call you friend, Andy. Andy Larson from Salt City Hoops, managing editor, day-to-day operations chief. Man, you got things going on over there at Salt City Hoops. Welcome to the show with us, man.
Well, thanks, and I consider you a friend too, so it all works out.
Sweet. John, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm glad we're in the postseason. Even though the Jazz aren't, I'm enjoying the beginning of the postseason.
Yes, I can tell by your tweets that you're enjoying it. I think you cursed the. I think you cursed at the Rockets a little while ago.
Yeah, that's one series where I care who wins, actually. So I'm hoping the Mavericks can pull that off. Although it does look like it's going to be a tough matchup for us. But Houston's ahead now, and that's one I wouldn't be surprised to win.
Yeah, I kind of hope.
What do you need?
What's that?
Go downstairs.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping the Mavericks could win that series too. I'm not a big Rockets fan. And Andy, I'm going to make this clear right now. I'm not a big James Harden fan either. I can't stand the guy.
I don't think you're alone on that. There are a lot of guys who watch the NBA who are not James Harden fans. I mean, it's just kind of a style of play, I think, for most people, where he's, you know, the ultimate expression of Morey ball, so to speak. The get to the line or shoot threes. He's not an exuberant player. He's not, again, there's kind of the defense question. And it seems like sometimes with the arms extended move, he's not cheating the game, but he's doing it in the cheapest way possible, I guess, is a way to put it. So I don't think you're alone there. I don't have the hate that a lot of people do, but yeah.
Well, and I do know, I think I've had conversations with your counterpart, Ben. I don't think Ben's a big fan of his either.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, he likes to bring that up too.
Okay, so I want to throw some things at you for a second. Salt City okay. Hoops, you've been doing Salt City Hoops now for, what is it, year, 2 years?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years in about a month.
All right, tell us, okay, I know a little backstory on you. You were with SLC Dunk for quite a while. You're very stats-driven, analytics-driven. You used to do your podcast with Clark. You had the Andy and Clark show on SLC Dunk. And then how did the gig with Salt City Hoops come out for you?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll kind of roll it back even further back than SLC Dunk. And really the first time I started writing about the Jazz was for JazzBots. I don't know if you remember that, but that kind of program that the Jazz threw together where they kind of had a blog on UtahJazz.com. They had a contest to kind of figure out who would be able to write for this Jazz blog called JazzBots. And I submitted my name into the contest, lost the first year, won the second year. So I was kind of joined this group. And then that kind of wound down. And so then that's when I joined SLC Dunk and started the Clark and Andy show and started writing, multiple times a week for SLC Dunk. And really, it was just kind of Spencer Hall, who was the founder of Salt City Hoops, was kind of in a point where he was transitioning to go to KSL.com. He was now their news director. And it was kind of a thing where he couldn't run both KSL.com and SaltCityHoops.com at the same time. So he was kind of looking for someone local, someone who wrote a lot, someone who could kind of manage the site, someone who had the technological experience, and someone who could kind of take over that credential as well, and kind of represent Salt City Hoops for the Jazz in the media room, on press row, et cetera. And so he, you know, did some interviews, and I was lucky enough to get one of those, and was ultimately lucky enough to get the job.
Way back when, do you remember who you lost to, and are they still writing?
Who I lost to in the Jazz Bots? Yeah, I mean, Diana, I think, was one of the original Jazz Bots. I remember, so, you know, I was like 16 at the time when I did this. So I was not a very good writer, and I don't blame them at all for not taking me that first year. I think I just wrote like a generic, I'm an Upper Bowl season ticket holder and you should pick me kind of post. And then the next year I actually did my stats thing, which is kind of what I've been known for since then. And obviously that's something they were a lot more interested in. So, I'm trying to remember, I think Joey, he's on Twitter. I can't even remember what his handle is. He's changed it so many times now.
You got to love it, baby, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. There are a bunch of the original JazzBots bloggers still kind of hanging around Twitter, and it's cool to see.
In fact, one of them writes for you now. David J. Smith started there too, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, he did.
So I remember those days. I actually was going to apply and ended up backing out. I don't remember why, but I remember those first couple of years. I used to read all of you guys religiously on that JazzBots. So I remember those days very, very clearly.
Yeah, it was a cool thing. It was kind of a bummer when it kind of wound down and didn't get as much organizational support anymore. But then we all kind of found our own niche, I feel like. So, you know, it hasn't worked out too poorly in the end.
No, not at all. How, obviously you have the credentials now. Aside from the credentials for the Jazz, how have things changed for you since SLC Dunk and now with Salt City Hoops?
I don't know. I guess what do you mean by change? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, you've got a lot more responsibility now. You've got credentials, so you're obviously down in the locker room and you get to interview coaches, players, you get to be around that where you weren't with SLZ Dunk. I guess what I'm getting at is describe your feelings of where you're at now and what you're involved in now versus what you were.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there's just a big difference between being the managing editor of a blog and kind of just being a contributor or being a piece of it. And you're kind of the guy that, for example, Henry Abbott will come to me if he has a Jazz idea or wants a quote or something like that. Advertisers will come to me. Anyone who has a question about Salt City Hoops generally will come to me. So it's just kind of like being kind of the point man from a writing perspective. There's a lot more editorial work than I thought that there would be. Certainly more than I did with SLC Dunk, which was, I edited my posts and not anybody else's. Now I'm kind of in charge of anything. So anything that shows up on the site, I kind of want to meet the Salt City Hoop standards, if you will. From a more personal level, I think my fandom has evolved a lot because I've had credentials. I used to be that guy with, like I said, I had Upper Bowl season tickets, and I'd go to every autograph session, I'd go to every chalk talk, and I still love those things, and sometimes I'll even sneak into one of them just because I know they're happening, because I still get the season ticket holder emails. And I realized as I say that maybe the season ticket department is listening and I shouldn't have said that on your podcast. So maybe they'll remove my email, but I can still like sneak in because I know those things are happening. But for the most part, it's a very different feel. I'm around these guys professionally rather than kind of as a fan. And it's weird, I can't cheer on press row, obviously. I still root for the team to do well, and I think that comes out in my tweets and in my coverage. But you have to have an objective point of view to it. So it's kind of a weird balancing act that you have to take on with credentials. Because, before that, I was a very diehard fan. As people who sat around me, I was known as the crazy one in my section. I would yell and curse and know the refs by name and yell terrible things at them. And now, I have to tweet those things instead.
Yes, you do. John, are you still there with us? What have you got to throw in on this?
Yeah, I was just trying to see if I could fix my mic. I'm muffled. Let's go over some of the stats that've been popping out with you this year with the progress in the team and what you're able to see as positive trends with this team. Specifically, we were looking at what we were trying to determine what progress has been made under Quinn Snyder, what the players have specifically improved on under Quinn that we can noticeably tell. Last year when they tried to play Hayward at the two, it just kind of really messed with his numbers. And now that he's back firmly at the three, you can tell that he's been able to improve in a lot of areas. His shooting's gone back up, his efficiency's back up, and he's just, you know, had all around a really good season for him. What have you been able to determine with Hayward and the strength that Quinn's been able to bring out of him?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it there is he's just making more and better shots. I mean, if you look at it, so for example, he's taking a higher percentage of his threes this season, taking a higher percentage of threes this season. So not only is he making more, but he's taking more. He's way reduced his long two-point shot. So, I mean, I've got his basketball reference page open, so don't think I have this memorized. But he took 30% from mid-range, long two-range last season. This season, he's taken less than 20%. So, you know, it's those sort of things that make him more efficient on the offensive end just by being in Quinn's system, being a smarter player, taking smarter shots, and being closer to the hoop or closer or further to the hoop, so he's taking smarter shots. And then secondly, I do think that positional thing is a little bit important for him because he's not the quickest guy. And in particular, having someone like an Elijah Millsap, for example, who can guard the opponent's best wing is, I think, really important to him. Both his effectiveness offensively and defensively, because he really isn't a shutdown one-on-one defender. But if he can do well enough on that end and help and be part of kind of that rotational defense that really Quinn Snyder has instituted so well, especially over the second half of the season, then he can do a really good job as part of that kind of cohesive unit. And so I think Quinn's recognized that, put him off the team's best defender sometimes, or the opposition's best offensive player, and done a lot better job on that side of the ball. So it's a little bit of the system and how he's being utilized. And of course, I think part of it is just he's making more shots than he was last year too.
Yeah, and I'm speaking of Hayward and really the position and or positionless idea behind this. When Hayward came out of college, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe Hayward was a natural two. That was his position. And now this year he's played a lot more of the three. And like you talk about, he's making more shots. I mean, that's a given. And it looks like he's more comfortable playing and shooting as he is. In a positionless system, and I'm doing my air quotes, like what Quinn likes to talk about, does Hayward really play one position versus the other at all?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's much more about matchups. I might have to challenge you a little bit on that. Hayward played more at the two and at Butler. Because of his size, I think he actually played a lot of three and maybe even a little bit of small ball four for Brad Stevens there. I think he did play some two, but I would think of it kind of more he played bigger in college than he did at the NBA level.
I didn't mean Butler. I meant last year.
Was that what you meant as well, Alan?
No, I'm sorry. I brought Butler into it too, John. I wasn't trying to, mostly because I've always pictured Hayward as a two, but I've always wanted it to see him at the three, and he's played that position. And he seems to be more of a natural fit. But like I said, back to the fact is, like you're saying, it's more of a matchup thing with him on both ends of the floor, right?
Yeah, I that's totally what I think. And, you know, you don't want him on the speedier twos. You know, I don't know that I want him guarding... I'm blanking right now. I don't really want him guarding, say, Jamal Crawford, for example, although
Tyreek Evans
could do that well. Tyreek Evans might be a better example. I don't really want him guarding Kyle Korver, though, either, who's more of a three, just because then all of a sudden Hayward has to run off a lot of screens. He's going to use a ton of energy on the defensive end and not be able to be the game changer that he is on the offensive end. So, and Quinn Snyder, in my mind, has done a pretty good job of that this season, of realizing, hey, you know, I've got kind of these fungible guys at the shooting guard position. On offense, it doesn't really matter that much if Joe Ingles or Elijah Millsap or Chris Johnson or whoever else is playing that two position next to Hayward. So let's put him on the opposition's best offensive guy, have Hayward have a little bit less of the ball on the defensive side, and then he can really make a difference when he does have the ball in his hands on the offensive end, running pick and roll, running the offense, doing his facilitator role that he's done so well this season.
You know, what's weird to me is his blocks are down. Why do you think that is?
I think that might be part of it, honestly, is that he is guarding the opposing ball handler less often. You know, if you have a chance to guard less shots, you obviously have a less of a chance to get more blocks. I may have to look that one up, and I'm going to while we do this podcast and see, because we can actually track now, by the way, because of the sport view data, how many shots a defender guards. So it may, I would bet that it's less than last season.
And I'm curious, a lot of his blocks or a good portion of them came on the weak side anyway, didn't they? I mean, he'd come off of a weak side, you know, situation, or even on a fast break and catch a player heading to the hoop, and he'd get a block out of it.
That's true, and maybe because the Jazz are getting back as a whole on transition defense, he doesn't need to have those chase down blocks anymore because he has someone else behind him preventing that play from even happening in the first place.
And I'm curious. I have another question regarding his offensive game. Is there something you'd like to see maybe him add to his offensive arsenal? I mean, what about the post-up game? I mean, at his position, is that, and even in Quinn's offense, is that a viable option down the road for him?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but I don't see him as being that successful at that. You know, I don't know that that's I think it could be a little tweak to his game, but I don't think he's going to be a scoring threat from there. I mean, to me, I think he needs to add a little bit of he needs to be a little bit better on the pick and roll, which I know sounds crazy because he's pretty good right now. But I think it's kind of improving what he's already good at that I'd like to see rather than kind of adding whole new elements to his game. So, you know, I'd like to see him shoot better than 36% from three next season, for example. I'd like to see him maybe get a couple more assists per game than he did last season. He only got 4.1 per game. While that's still pretty good and almost leads the Jazz, in fact, that, you know, given how much he has the ball in his hands, I might expect a little bit more. You may also expect him to go to the line a little bit more, although he did raise that a lot this season, so maybe that's asking a lot. I just think that he can improve his all-around game just a titch in a lot of different categories, maybe improve his shooting efficiency a little bit, and that to me is the way forward. But I mean, right now he's already a really good player, don't get me wrong. In my mind, the best player on the Jazz.
Yeah, I think he was sixth or seventh in the NBA for free throws made. So
was he really? Yeah. I didn't realize he was that high.
He's pretty high.
Well, then that's probably unfair for me to expect more than that.
I'm trying to find my leader page. Now I can't remember where I saved it. But yeah, he does a good job. But it was like James Harden is the leader.
I've got him
by like over 100 free throws, and then it's the next guy.
Yeah, I've got him as 11th according to Basketball Reference, and just free throws per game. I don't really expect him to get to like the Harden Westbrook level. So maybe that was a little bit of unfair to me, or unfair to him, excuse me.
And there was a point when Alec Burks was the guy on the Jazz that would get to the free throw line more than anybody else. And that was going on for the first part of the season, but it was in about December, if I remember correctly, when Hayward's numbers started making a jump. That's also when we saw, you know, Burks go down for the season with an injury, and then January Hayward's numbers went off the charts.
Yeah.
So
and that to me is a real question, you guys, is whether or not he fits in with the team next year. I know this is a completely different topic that what you from what you want to talk about, but I mean, both Alec Burks offensively, he seemed to Hayward seemed to do a little bit better when Alec was out because he had the ball in his hands more. I think the offense flowed a little bit better. The Jazz had more passes per possession in the latter part of the season once Alec was out than they did earlier. And then defensively, obviously, the big jump also happened after Alec was out, although obviously there were compounding factors there as well with Enes Kanter and Rudy Gobert and whatever else. But I'm really curious to see how Alec Burks comes back next year because he's a decent passer, but he's not kind of the willing passer that we saw from a lot of Jazz shooting guards besides Alec Burks this season.
Well, and I throw this observation into the Memphis game in December comes to mind for me, but although, I mean, everything you just said, I throw in a caveat that when Alec Burks was in the game, it would seem maybe things didn't flow, but at times, because he was in the game, defenses didn't have to focus near as much on Hayward either.
That's true. That's very true. And so, yeah, I think that's a real question. I'm not as worried about the offensive side, I guess, as the defensive side. And that's where Alec's struggles really lie. And I think he was great at on-the-ball defense, but he would occasionally make the wrong rotation defensively. It frustrated Ty Corbin, and it did frustrate Quinn Snyder at the beginning as well. But, you know, everyone said he's tried to learn a ton while he's been on the bench, that he is learning about how this NBA defense works. Again, the number one defense in the league since the All-Star break, that maybe he can apply what he's learned on the bench to his play next season. It's that, to me, is the biggest question about the Jazz, at least before we know who the draft pick is and who the free agency and any trades, et cetera.
Okay, well now I wanted to transition us to the end of season awards.
Now that I have taken you completely off topic, sorry about that.
No. Well, and John and I are very well known for getting off topic a lot. Trust me.
Okay, good. By the way, I looked up that stat on Gordon Hayward shooting, defending more shots, and he did defend about one more shot per game last season.
There you go.
So, anyway.
Do you have those mid-season awards up, John?
I do. The ones that they've already announced, sixth man. Now, mid-season, I had Isaiah Thomas, Devin had Lewis Williams, and Allen had Jamal Crawford. And Lewis Williams is the actual winner. And then for Coach of the Year, we all had Mike Budenholzer.
And
he drafted barely beat Steve Kerr.
You guys did a great job then, right? Like you guys are prognosticators deluxe. Like that's pretty impressive.
And I'm gonna go caveat here on myself. I said Jamal Crawford and the guy got injured, okay? He sat out like a month, didn't he?
He did. And injuries kind of affected some of mine.
Yeah.
Down the road that we'll get to.
But kudos to Devins. He went Lou Williams and he was right.
Yeah.
And Isaiah Thomas was number two. I mean, that's a reasonable pick.
Yep. And at the time, he was at Phoenix.
Right.
All right. What's our other awards, John?
Rookie of the Year. We all picked Andrew Wiggins. I think that's still a safe pick, although a couple of the other rookies probably have arguments on why they should be considered. But I do think it's going to be Andrew Wiggins. Oh, and here's one that is probably affected. Most improved player, all of us picked Jimmy Butler, and then he got injured.
Who's your most improved player, Andy?
I mean, there's a lot of Rudy Gobert buzz. I still probably pick Jimmy Butler. And I mean, I understand why Rudy Gobert is the choice there. But, you know, Jimmy Butler played 65 games. He only missed 17. I believe he still played more minutes than Rudy Gobert did last season. So, you know, you can't use that too much against Jimmy Butler just because, you know, if that's the case, and I am looking it up again right now.
You are totally correct. I just looked it up.
Yeah, so it, given that Yeah, so given that Jimmy Butler played more minutes overall, I don't think that's fair to, you know, give him, take that away from him, given that Rudy Gobert played fewer. I mean, and then you look at the leap he took, he absolutely led that Chicago team in the East. He really is a top, he was a top 15 or 20 player in the league this year. I don't think Rudy Gobert is there yet. I love what Rudy did, and I think he's probably going to be the number two guy. But ultimately, if I take off my Jazz cap for a little bit, I think you have to go with Butler.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think we're all in
agreement. Are you the same with us on Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I think there's no question. Wiggins will win.
Now, take out all the injuries. Does Andrew Wiggins still come in? I mean, my initial part of the season, I had Milwaukee's
Jabari Parker,
but gosh, him. Yeah, we had a lot of rookies go down with injury. What's that?
Yeah, preseason rookie picks they hardly ever work out. But yeah, there were so many. I think four of the top seven picks missed most of the season, something like that.
Which is crazy. Yeah, I don't think I've ever.
Never there. Jabari Parker, Julius Randle, Aaron Gordon, just all these guys. Just major section of the season, if not the whole season.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think Wiggins was a little bit overrated this year. Had one of those guys stayed healthy and performed moderately well, I think we could have a different Rookie of the Year. But I don't think Jabari looked great. I might have to disagree with you that I think if both of those guys played the rest of the season like they did their first 2 months, I think ultimately Andrew Wiggins still wins the award. I think there's no question Wiggins wins it now.
Well, this is the second year in a row that the Rookie of the Year, and I'm just going to assume he wins, is the guy that put up a lot of great stats on arguably the worst team in the NBA. Because you had Michael Carter-Williams win it last year for Philadelphia, which was not an NBA team last year. And then Minnesota, I think, were they tied for worst? I can't remember what their record was, but they were just the worst team in the NBA. But he played all 82 games, so.
They were the very worst record, so you're right.
Yeah. I think there's a little more substance in his numbers, though.
Well,
He
surprised me. I was with you, Andy. I thought he was underrated or overrated, excuse me, coming in. Into the draft last year, I wasn't a big fan of Wiggins at all. Reading up on everything on him, I didn't have very many good thoughts, you know, and as far as where he could go. But he has definitely surprised me with what he's done. Now, granted, it's on the worst team in the league, but still, he's put up good numbers and he's looked fairly good.
He's been exciting, if not efficient.
Yeah, his efficient field goal is like 45%. So, I mean, he's a rookie. There's a lot of room there.
Yes. What's our other awards?
Defensive Player of the Year. I said Tony Allen, and then he went down. Devin picked Anthony Davis. And you picked Steph Curry. I think we're all wrong.
Yeah.
You picked Steph Curry, Alan?
I did. At the time, I was looking at his defensive numbers, and he was very good.
Well, yeah, but that's mostly because of who he plays with, right?
All right, yes. But, yeah, that's true, and I picked him because of Golden State. Okay, fine, I made a gutsy call there, but he was. I looked at the defensive numbers in the NBA, and the two best players in defensive rating was he and his teammate, Green. So it's like,
yeah.
I'm like, who do I go with? Might as well go with the best player. Why not?
Well, and I think you were right to narrow it down, I guess, between those two guys, but I think Draymond's going to win it.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair. And I looked at it too. It's not like very many point guards have ever won it. In fact, I think the last point guard to win Defensive Player of the Year was back in the 90s. It was the glove. So I felt like I could make a gutsy call. What's that?
You even mentioned that in your prediction that you wrote in February.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I mean, it's just unheard of for a point guard to win Defensive Player of the Year. So I thought I'd make a gutsy move. Why not?
If you're picking a point guard to win Defensive Player of the Year, I think I'd go with Chris Paul.
But has his numbers on the defense been all that good this year, Andy?
They've been good. I guess the Clippers have not been that good, and that's the thing. And that's really that's kind of the question of DeAndre Jordan's Defensive Player of the Year candidacy is, you know, he puts a lot of good defensive numbers, but ultimately his team defense not that good. So, exactly. You know, what are you left with? I think it's going to be a Warrior. I think you have to go with either Draymond or Andrew Bogut, and then Kawhi Leonard is going to fall in there somewhere just because he has been spectacular when he's played.
Where does Rudy fall on the list?
I think he makes some people's ballots. I bet he ends up as fourth. But ultimately, and I could even see him be third if you get a little bit of split of that Warrior vote. But ultimately, I just think, again, the guy didn't make an impact for most of the first part of the season, and the Warriors have just been so good defensively from start to finish. It's hard to give the Defense Player of the Year award to somebody who played for the 12th best defense. Ditto with the Clippers in the 15th best defense. So even though the Jazz got a lot better, it's a whole year of award, and the Warriors had one of the best defenses in recent memory. I think you have to give it to someone from their team, no matter what.
Yep. And then the last one was MVP. We all had Steph Curry number one. And, I'm the only one that had Harden number two. Allen had Anthony Davis number two, and Devin had LeBron James number two.
And I want to ask Andy this. I think, do you agree that Steph Curry's it?
Yeah, he is. And mostly for, honestly, the reason we were talking about, that a lot of media guys don't like James Harden and so are going to be voting against him. I mean, I think Curry wins on the storyline and on the strength of his team, which was legitimately awe-inspiring at times this season.
So let me throw this legitimate argument here in my eyes. How much does LeBron James really deserve discussion in this, though? Because MVP, granted, it's going to be the best player on the best team, probably. But can anyone really negate what LeBron's done in Cleveland this year?
You can point to how they started the season 19 and 20 and say you don't deserve an MVP for a second half of really good work. And that's what it is. And you can make an argument that I think he's the second half MVP. But before he took that 2-week sabbatical, he wasn't the same player. I mean, he wasn't trying on the defensive end. He wasn't as efficient offensively. And sure, he's made a world of difference for Cleveland since then. But again, it's a year-long award. I think you have to give it to someone, either Curry or Harden, who's brought it night after night, made their team so much better, both offensively and defensively. I mean, I just think it's really hard to give LeBron that award this year.
Yeah, the numbers he was putting up 2 years ago when he won, and compare it to this year. I know he's on a different team and everything, but you can just see marked difference in what he was able to do. And so I'm comfortable saying that he's third this year. Granted, he's the best player overall in the NBA, but I think Steph's year has to be recognized.
All right, fair enough. I want to take our discussion just a little bit different, not necessarily off topic, but I want to ask you, have you ever seen, at least in the few years you've been, you know, keeping up on the stats and things, and which has been a while, have you ever seen this drastic a turnaround by a team that the Jazz have had this year?
From beginning to an end of a season. I can't think off the top of my head. Maybe Indiana, the year that they replaced whoever came before Vogel with Vogel. I can't remember who that was for the life of me, but that year they really turned things around. Beyond that, though, nothing. Jim O'Brien was who they replaced with Vogel.
Yes.
beyond that, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. And there have been teams that have played significantly better in the second half of the year, but nothing that where they just changed the entire identity of a team so quickly in the course of a year. I mean, again, and we all know the stats, but the Jazz being the very worst defense in the league for the first two months of the season and the very best defense in the league for the last 2 months of the season is essentially unheard of. It has never happened before. So at least if you look at that side of the ball, no, there really hasn't been a turnaround like it.
Yeah, and that's what I've been sitting on for the last probably month or so. I've just been sitting back just going, man, this is incredible. What they have done is absolutely incredible. And what Quinn has done is incredible because I think a lot of credit goes to Quinn because he's gotten a group of young players to buy into what he, you know, what he wants to do. And I remember when the Jazz, you know, had the press conference last summer, how much people were talking about his offensive genius and his ability, you know, to write good offenses. But he talked that day about wanting to change the defensive makeup of the Jazz. And sure enough, he's done that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really impressive to me. That may be the most impressive thing to me about Quinn as a coach this year, is that he has been able to adapt away from kind of what he's known as a style. I mean, you think about his offense in Atlanta, for example, where they had the five spread bigs where, you know, you have Teach playing out as a center position who can shoot threes and Millsap out there as well. Kind of a spread five offense that gave Indiana some trouble season, and then he goes with Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, and Kemper, and kind of adapts that offense to fit a traditional two-big lineup. And doesn't go fast. You know, he talked about wanting to go fast earlier in the year, and instead, the Jazz were the slowest team in the league this year. But still, he made it work offensively, and kind of talked about that. That's more difficult for him to coach. But he's been able to adapt somehow, and to me, that's been really impressive. Is just how he's been able to maybe not do what he's would prefer to do on the offensive side and still put up decent offensive numbers.
Where do you think they're going to go in the offseason? I mean, there's so many possibilities, but where do you really think they're going to go?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think they have two possibilities, right? I mean...
Whoa, what was that?
We good?
Yeah.
I think they have two possibilities. I mean, they can sign a kind of a big name ish guy, someone like a Danny Green, someone like someone along those lines. Maybe make a trade for a Paul George. Sorry, not a Paul George. Who am I thinking? The point guard, George Hill. Thank you. You know, make a trade for a 8-win player like that and go for it right away. I don't think that that's what they'll end up doing. I think probably they want to make the roster better by just bolstering the bench and kind of taking that low-hanging fruit, not playing 7 rookies next season, not playing 5 D-leaguers at a time. So I think you see an upgrade at the point guard position. I think you see an upgrade at the shooting guard position. You kind of see an upgrade at the bench overall, kind of adding these 5-win sort of players just to replace minutes at guys like Jeremy Evans, Chris Johnson, Elijah Millsap, Joe Ingles, heck, Trey Burke got this season. And it was a little bit unfair of me to throw in Trey Burke there. But nevertheless. And then they're really hoping for development from Dante Exum is really, I think, where they think the biggest development is going to be. And that, to me, is a lot of pressure to put on a 19-year-old. But nevertheless, that's their thought process right now.
And that was going to be my next question regarding Trey Burke and Dante. If you could pick, and I'm going to ask you to pick two things here. If you could pick one of the two of them or both that will be back next season, and then if you could pick your top 8 rotation of all the guys that are on the team, Gordon Hayward down through the rest, your top 8 rotation to be back next year, who are they?
Okay, answering the first question, I mean, Dante's back. There's just no question. The Jazz aren't trading him for anything. They're keeping him. They love him. They know he's the future. They have too much emotional tie to the fact that they were bad last year in order to draft him. I mean, and they just won't trade him. He's back. Trey Burke is a really interesting question because people in the organization aren't in love with him. You know, obviously he shot 36%, 36.8% last year. So that's terrible. and sure, he used a lot of shots and it was kind of sometimes the best option in that bench lineup, but this is now kind of two seasons in a row where he's shown, and he's been nice enough to give us a large sample size too. So, you can't blame it on that, but he's kind of shown that he's not a good NBA shooter. He's not a good NBA finisher. And maybe most concerning for the Jazz is that he's not a great passer from the point guard position. I mean, especially when he was coming off the bench in the six man role, he was not facilitating, for large swaths of the end of last season. So I ultimately wouldn't be surprised to see him gone somehow, for some other better backup point guard, quite honestly, someone who is a willing passer in the system, who can create a little bit on the pick and roll, and not just get shots for himself, who can maybe finish a little bit around the basket. And while it's somewhat difficult to find those guys, they're not impossible finds. So, you know, you could go to like a Gravis Vasquez, for example. You could go, to maybe even like a Luke Ridnour. I mean, There are a lot of possibilities there that you could probably get an upgrade on from Trey Burke's production last season. And ultimately, I think they go with it just because Trey Burke doesn't have the incredible upside that Dante Exum does. I mean, in the end, he's not going to be a great player in the league just because he doesn't have the athleticism, he doesn't have the speed, and he probably never will, right? So I wouldn't be that surprised to see Trey Burke back, but if I had to guess, I guess I say no, because ultimately I think the Jazz want an upgrade at the point guard next year.
Okay, so then your top eight that are back.
Top eight, yes, thank you, sorry. So let's see here. I'm going to go Dante Exum. Do I have to do it in order?
No.
Okay. Dante Exum, Gordon Hayward, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, Rodney Hood, Alec Burks. Is that seven?
Yes.
So then
Booker's still on contract. Does Booker come back?
I think Booker comes back. I think ultimately they don't find someone to use Booker's salary cap space on.
So what odds would you place on a draft night trade?
Sorry, what? Will you say that one more time?
What odds would you place on a draft night trade?
That's another good question. I've talked to the front office on this, and it is definitely something they're considering. I don't know. I mean, it's so hard. Obviously, they're going to do it if it makes the team better, which is the stupidest thing that's ever been said, because of course. But I really do think they think about trading it. My sense is that they're not in love with anybody at number 12. And if they do get an offer for someone who can really contribute next season, I think they go for it. I mean, it's really difficult to me to then figure out what NBA teams would give up for that number 12 pick. You know, given that the Jazz don't like it, I don't think a lot of other teams do either. It's such a hard question. I mean, to put odds on it, I honestly throw it at 50-50 and kind of do a cop-out, but it is definitely something that the Jazz are heavily considering as they try to figure out how to make next year's team better.
So I'll throw another hard one at you. Trade up or trade down?
Okay, great. I think the idea would be to trade out.
Okay.
Or at the very least down.
Okay.
I think they would love to get someone like a D'Angelo Russell, but they're not going to be willing to give up anything in order to get up there. They obviously have a lot of assets, so maybe you do something like the number 12 plus Golden State's pick for someone like George Hill, a real contributor who makes a difference on both sides of the ball, fits into your system, And maybe that's enough to make Indiana bite. Probably not, because George Hill's had a great season. But I think that's the way they go, rather than adding more young talent. Because quite frankly, they have young guys at least too deep at every position.
And that is the stance I've stood at for most of the season. So you've pretty much backed me up on that one. And I'm right there with you. That's where I think the Jazz will be at. If there's a trade, they're either going to trade down or trade out. Because I, like you said, I think the biggest thing is they don't want to go younger.
Yeah, and I just don't think that they have the assets to go from number 12, or don't want to give up the assets to go from number 12 to number, I would say, probably 5 or 6, where it starts to make a real difference in my mind. To me, there's a pretty big tier difference from the top 5 compared to the next 5 in the draft.
Exactly. John?
Are there any Twitter questions that we got that we haven't answered?
No. I think the only question we had, you already asked at the start, and that was about Gordon Hayward's transition from Ty Corbin to Quinn Snyder. So I think we've answered that. That was Cameron from Utah Men podcast. So, no, I think we've covered the questions. Is there anything else you wanted to cover, John?
Well, now we have to move to the biggest news of the week, and that was the new Star Wars trailer.
Yes. Yes. The
my son is on a mission in the Philippines, and so what I did, because he can't get internet there, except he can get our email. So I took about 15 screenshots from the trailer, and it's just emailing and screenshots to get them all hyped. he'll be home like 3 weeks before the movie opens.
And,
a nice way to put his mind.
And what was his response?
Ah, I can't wait.
Andy, do you get much into Star Wars?
I've seen all the movies, but I can't say that I am not you, Alan. I feel bad even calling you Alan. Your name's Jedi, for crying out loud. Like, I have not renamed myself in order to pay homage to the series.
Well, don't let my wife hear this podcast, because she constantly gets mad when everybody calls me Jedi. She's like, he's not a Jedi. His name isn't Jedi. It's Alan.
But Twitter handle used to be Jedi wife.
Yeah, I know it used to be. And she changed it, but she...
And it is no longer.
Yes, and she stood by that for a while, saying, you know what, I'm just feeding his... Yeah, she feeds my frenzy, and then she still gets bothered by it. Go figure. yeah, I'm... John, I... man, this weekend was crazy insane for me, surreal. Because the Star Wars celebration, and they allowed... folks to watch it via live stream. So I watched a lot of things this weekend, and there were two trailers that I got caught up in. So the Star Wars trailer, it didn't really tell us any much, you know, not a lot more than what we already know about the movie, but it was just cool. And to have Han Solo and Chewbacca at the very end, was just, I'm not as crazy as some of the folks out there that says I was bawling by the end of the trailer. No, that wasn't me. But I definitely had some chills going on, man. That was sweet. Yes.
I didn't see Harrison Ford coming. I have not. I was probably announced way before then that he'll be a part of this movie, but I didn't see it coming.
Yeah. And he looked good, too. He looked good. I'm excited. So
it looks like we got a lot of misdirection in the trailers, because when Luke's doing his voiceover and he says, my sister has it, and you see one hand off the lightsaber to a woman. The person doing the handoff, you can barely see their face on the side, but it's an alien. It's either a really weird mask or it's an alien handing that person a lightsaber. So there's a few things I think they're portraying in the trailer that that's not how it actually happened.
Yeah, that's probably true. I've heard some rumors, and I've tried to stay away from Rumorville because I don't want it. I want to go into this movie and just enjoy it. But some of the rumors would suggest that the lightsaber was lost and somehow found and given to Rey is her name, who is the daughter of Han Solo and Princess Leia, or at least that's assumed to be. And then the hunt is on to find Luke Skywalker, who's been on a sabbatical for a while. So, I again, beyond that, I don't know. And like I said, there's a lot of stuff flying around out there, but I've tried to avoid it as much as possible. So
yeah, we know Finn is a stormtrooper on the run, and there's a scene where you have the TIE fighter in some kind of hangar bay firing at other stormtroopers, so it looks like there's some kind of civil war or two or something going on.
Yep. And we also know that there is another woman in the movie. I don't know how much Game of Thrones either of you guys watch, but apparently I'm forgetting her name, Christine, I think. Brienne. But huh?
Gwendolyn Christie.
Yes.
Brienne.
Yes. And she plays the Red Stormtrooper in the movie.
Is that confirmed that she's the Chrome Stormtrooper?
I don't know if I call it confirmed, but it's about as confirmed as I think it's going to be right now.
Okay, because when I first saw that, and I was like, who is this guy? After I watched the trailer about six more times, I kind of went, I guess that's Gwendolyn Christie.
Yeah. And like I said, there was some rumor floating around out of, I don't know that it's officially confirmed, but I think it's about as confirmed as we're going to get right now.
Okay, so that's all I want to confirm this. And then there's the standalone, the trailer leaked online. I don't think there's been a quality leak of it yet, but I saw a bootleg trailer of it. And all it is Obi-Wan's voice, and we see the Death Star in the sky. And that's going to be about the group of people who got together to steal the plans from the Death Star. And it's supposed to be a darker heist, maybe.
Yes, very war-oriented.
That one's going to be directed by Gareth Edwards, who did Godzilla.
Yes. Okay, but Andy.
Yes.
So I want to ask you, Andy, what's your favorite TV series running that you're watching right now?
I'm going to say I've been watching Community on Yahoo, and it's actually pretty good. It's still, I finished Parks and Rec, obviously. So, you know, I'm like in that group of like Office, Parks and Rec, Community, Comedy, Half Hour, kind of, yeah, those are my kind of favorite TV shows.
That's cool. I haven't watched any of the new Community on Yahoo screen yet, but I'm kind of nervous since half the cast is gone, but it's still going. So yeah, it still holds up.
It does. It's still like goofy and still works for the same reasons it worked before, I think. There are some times where it's a little bit weird not to have Troy and the rest and Pierce and whoever else. But it still works.
Cool. Have there been any episodes as classic as like the Goodfellas episode or the Glee episode?
No, they haven't done like a major like one episode spinoff kind of thing yet, like they, you know, like they have in the previous seasons. But it's been good thus far. I would say no classics though.
Okay.
And you notice that I'm completely quiet here because we've already established that the Jedi is behind on his TV watching, so we're just gonna.
I could talk about Game of Thrones, but I think I'm the only one watching it right now.
Every week this happens with us, John. You're asking if I'm watching something, and I'm always saying no, and you're the only one.
I'm still two episodes away from finishing this season's House of Cards.
Ooh, what do you think about this season thus far?
It's kind of been the weakest of the three. And it's gone a couple places, because I follow politics too, and there's a lot of melodramatic things that happen. But this year, especially with the foreign stuff, it has gone to some pretty unbelievable cognitive dissonance places that just doesn't fit. That's just not how politics would happen.
Yeah, it was always kind of unbelievable, but I feel like it's gotten less interesting this season. It's the biggest part to me. Like before, at least it was interesting and believable, or it was unbelievable but still interesting. And now I don't know that it's interesting anymore.
Yeah, the appeal of the first two was he was a powerful guy who was manipulating people who were more powerful than him.
Right.
And now he's kind of a lion without prey, and it doesn't work as well. I mean, he's doing some pretty stupid things for a guy that had been so smart playing people the first few years.
I'm glad you guys are discussing and telling me about this, because I've enjoyed watching to this point, but that's one of the biggest questions I've had, is I've started thinking to myself, what happens when this guy runs out of prey? When he doesn't have anybody to prey on anymore, what does he do with himself? Because honestly, Underwood is the type of guy that I see, he's always got to have somebody to prey on, and if he doesn't, he'll end up destroying himself, really.
Well, I'm curious as to how this season's going to end and where they could possibly go for season four.
Yeah, I'm still going to watch season four, but I'm less excited than I was before. And I don't want to ruin it for you, but yeah.
No, don't worry. I'll be binge watching and continuing to binge watch. John got me on this, and I told him I'll continue to binge watch because that's what I'm doing.
I have this thing where I have so, like, I don't want to be like that annoying busy guy, but you don't want to spend all of your life watching TV shows. So I have this thing where, like, I'll make five friends. I need, in order to watch a show, I need five separate friends to recommend it to me. And then I'll be like, okay, it's past the test of people I'm friends with. I'll go ahead and, invest huge amounts of hours in watching the show. And like House of Cards and Parks and Rec and Community are those that fit in that category. So anyway, I guess I'm soliciting recommendations for the next one.
That's a good way to do it, especially these days where if you miss out on the beginning of something cool and you hear the way variety show, you like go back and watch a season at a time if you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, final question from me at least, and this goes along with our conversation too. The beginning, I was going to put you on the spot. Favorite movie?
There are so many good ones. I might have to say, I probably would give a different answer on a different day, but I watched Airplane recently, and that is just the most hilarious, stupidest movie. Nice. I just love it so much.
Nice.
So that's my answer.
Excellent.
It's a great movie. I read a study actually that it has the most laughs per minute. Like they did a study where they put a whole bunch of classic comedies in a theater and made people watch them, bummer of a study. And they counted the number of laughs per minute, and Airplane had over 6 laughs per minute, by far more than any other film.
I'm judging by the grin on Devin's face that he approves of your choice. Definitely. Am I right, Devin?
Oh yeah. Yeah, Airplane's a classic. You can't go wrong with that one.
John?
Yeah, I approve. Airplane, the first Naked Gun movie, that style. Those are good shows.
Seriously, Leslie Nielsen, dude. I mean, do I need to say anything more than Leslie Nielsen, really? So.
Nope, you don't.
All right, you got anything else you want to add, John?
No, I better start wrapping this up.
All right, Devin, anything you want to add?
Nope.
Okay. Well, we want to thank...
Oh, I was going to have Lost Taco Bender call in. I'll just have him call in next time.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously.
I missed out on the LTV.
The second week in a row you've done this to me, John.
I know. I'll get him next time. You can play that What's Up With That song again.
What's up with that? is this happening for real, or is it just another way to get people to listen to the podcast?
No, I used to co-host LPV's podcast that he had on this site, and so I'm trying to get him to come on this, but I'll get him next time.
It's all lies.
You go to his site and download all of our episodes.
The legend, Lost Taco Vendor. Oh, what a way to end this grandiose podcast. Very nicely done, John. And the legend will continue as a result. All right, Andy, we want to thank you for hopping on with us, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks, guys.
So, want to thank everybody for listening. As always, big thanks to our producer, Devin Masters, Stone by Devin. Folks, if you ever have And whatever, want to contact us, throw questions at us, you know where to find us on Twitter at Jedi and Germs. That account, I will again emphasize, is run by the intern that is John English. You can also reach John at Germs Guy, myself at Jedi Zog, and Andy on Twitter. It's Andy B. Larson, folks. If you're not following him, trust me, you're missing out. You need to be. He's an excellent follow and a good all around guy. And oh, by the way, he's a big RSL fan too. So, but yes, we want to thank him for joining us, and we want to thank you all for listening. Catch us next time on Jedi and Germs. John, take us out.
I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Nice.